Well, good evening, Glasgow. We are the last panel, so the last one bites the dust. Or there is another say, which is that the fireworks comes at the end of the show. Well, it's up to you. Stay tuned with us. It's going to be quite interesting. You know the topic. And actually, I was quite amused, you know. Ben and Cavendish, you invited the square-headed Swiss to hold the firework. But anyway, I tried. Transforming event delivery, that's the topic. So it's a wide open field, of course. There's a fluid environment. There are many aspects to that. So I said, okay, let's focus maybe on a few areas. And I'm very happy that I have a group of experts with me with different angles who can add into that. So I don't know whether the poll works. It is working. So you will give us instruction. All right, so that are the questions, and please feel free to answer them while we're having the talk. So let me introduce the panelists. And I will start with our lady. Ladies first. Trudy Lindblad, she is the chief executive of the 2023 UCI World Championships, which was held earlier this year, right here in Glasgow, as well as across Scotland. The first time 13 existing World Championships events have come together to create a single mega event. We have Jeremiah Walcott in the middle. He is the Vice President of Global Events at Major League Baseball and oversees the planning and execution of all league-delivered events and meetings globally. We have next to me Stuart Snowden. He is the Managing Director of IPSM Squared. You'll tell it correctly, yeah? Who provide event planning and delivery support to event owners and hosts, which allow them to better manage budget, accelerate timelines, and reduce the level of risks. And last but not least, you know Joel, you just met him, so I do not need to introduce you. Thank you, everybody, for being in joining this panel. Let me maybe start with an opening question to all of you. When you hear this title and you think about the transformation going on in our world, in your eyes, what are the main drivers you would think are influencing, or how do you identify these main drivers? Maybe start with Trudy. Huh?
Thanks, Daniel. Thank you very much for sticking with us towards the end of the day. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been thinking about this, and transformational can mean lots of different things depending on what your sport is or which area of the events landscape you're in. But for us, that transformational change, and for me in particular, one of the things that really attracted me to coming and working, moving from another sunny place in the world to a most beautiful place here in Glasgow, was the purpose-led approach to the Cycling World Championships. And for me, that is a transformational change, that events and mega events, certainly one-off events, need to have more to them than just delivering world-class events to get large amounts of public funding, to get commercial support, to tell those stories, the narrative, the storytelling, everything that goes with major events these days. You need to put everything around it, and we've heard some of that throughout the course of today. So for me, from the very beginning, we started that this event, the Cycling World Championships, needed to have that policy-led aspect from its core. What it meant, though, is that we couldn't let it distract from delivering the World Championships, and I can talk about that a little bit later. But that was at the very essence, excuse me, of what we tried to do. And I think host cities, event organizers, and suppliers need to think about those broader aspects, whether it's sustainability, whether it's EDI, whether it's, you know, working with children and young people, disadvantaged communities, whatever that is that sits around your event that can get new audiences, engage more, and then look to the fans of the future or the sports stars of the future. It's really important.
Thank you, Trudy. You would say con on that, Jeremiah, or what is your, how do you observe these drivers, and specifically maybe connected to your business?
Yeah, and first of all, thanks to Host City and Cavendish Group for having us. It's impressive to sit here throughout the day and hear different perspectives on the event business. You know, I think we often sit in our own bubbles when it comes to the work we do, and when you come to events like this and meetings like this, it really opens your eyes to so many things that you probably should be thinking about on a daily basis, but often because we're so much in our own lanes, we don't do it. But I just would encourage everyone to sort of take what you hear today and bring it back to your own world. I think as it relates to transformation from a league perspective, the challenge that we have, and it was spoken about a little bit earlier on multiple panels today, was how do you actually make the live event experience better, and how do you transform that? As a league, we only control so much of how our events are delivered to our fans. And that is to say, we rely on broadcasters and other forms of media to share the good word about what's happening in our case related to baseball and delivering that to the fan at home. As the gentleman earlier said, who wants to sit on their couch and experience baseball, we can only control so much of that because our broadcast partners deliver it. And while we can certainly influence it, it's hard to entirely control that. What we do typically have a lot of control on is the live experience of not only the game itself and certainly producing of the game that we're putting on the field, but also all of the accoutrement that kind of goes along with it, so that when a fan comes to a baseball event, in the case of Major League Baseball, they're expecting to get a baseball game and to watch the best players in the world compete on the field in 9 innings of baseball, but they're not maybe expecting to get a fan experience event that has all kinds of different elements of the sport that they can experience from young to old and really touch the game and be part of it, or the music that connects our game, or the food that connects to that. So for us, the transforming of sport today is how that live experience can change and how we can influence fan interest by making the live experience that much more entertaining, to some of the points earlier today.
Thank you, Jeremiah. And your perspective, Stuart, on that?
I think it's kind of interesting, and thank you for allowing us to be here and talk to you all today. I think it's sort of a combination of those two things, which is, if you look specifically at event delivery, the transformation is around sort of knowledge, technology, things like that. What's more fundamental and what's really driving the transformation is the expectations that the delivery team can't necessarily control. So it's the elements of EDI. It's, for example, the one this morning, I think the gentleman from AEG was talking about with T20, where the entertainment was as much a part of it as the actual sporting event was. So there's something there around what people expect from events these days that's going to change the type of events they expect to see. So Air Race X, like, you can sit at home and watch it, and that's a completely different type of event. So I think it's the external factors that the industry needs to respond to. They're going to drive a lot of that transformation, and a lot of that will be items beyond their control, because it'll be what the public wants or what the public expectation is. Be that EDI expectations, be it youth who don't watch as much now and have a much shorter attention span and need something different to draw them in other than what they were, what would have drawn me in 20, 30 years ago. So I think there's something there that really is being able to respond to the external stimuli and the external circumstances that are appearing.
Yes, thank you, Stuart. Joel, when you listen to what's been said, how does that resonate for you? And looking back at, you know, maybe the Birmingham Games or any other of events, how do you look at this transformation?
Well, I'd just give the example of the Major Events Fund that we've just established. I'm glad to see hosts have come up as top of the table up there. We announced a major events fund of $6 million, but we put some conditions around what we would fund and what we were interested in putting investment into, because it had to deliver the outcomes that we wanted to see from the investment we were putting in. Now, some of those outcomes were economic outcomes, and as I said at the start, every event will deliver a different outcome or combination of outcomes. So what we wanted to do is invest in a portfolio of events, some that would give us great media reach and eyeballs because they were, you know, driving big audiences. Kabaddi World Cup is a great example of that. We have a lot of people in our region from South Asian origin. We want to host the Kabaddi World Cup. which will talk to 1.5 billion people in the continent of South Asia. So our investment decisions are based on delivering the outcomes, and that the investment we were putting in, we had a clear line of sight to what we wanted to deliver. Similar examples, the Commonwealth Esports Championships. We wanted to reach more young people and inspire more young people. So that's where that investment came from as well. So I think, as Trudy says, purpose-driven, being really clear about the impact you're trying to achieve. And it's for investors or funders like us that will help to influence that kind of change in the industry.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I said at the beginning we probably need to focus on a few areas. So this is a question for Jeremiah. It's about the ownership and the responsibility. Dealing with IFs or delivery partners, what changes are you observing there?
Yeah, I think for us, from a league perspective, the biggest change is the agility of our delivery partners and how they can come to the table with a plan, certainly a well-laid-out plan, but also can pivot. I think we all learned through the pandemic and also through recent world change that while the best plan is really critical, really the key is that in the execution phase, when things don't go the way that you had expected, that your delivery partner can be agile and that they can adjust that plan and bring forth something modified that still hits on the goals of what you tried to do, but at the same time still gets you what is needed. I think that also sort of trickles in a little bit to how some of these events are funded, and often as different public entities in the states and come to the table and some of these funding models have changed over the last several years, some of that agility is really critical because you're not necessarily getting the same support you did at one point, and the event of 2018 is not the event of 2023, and so I think that agility among delivery partners is really critical.
Yes, thank you. Who wants to second on that, to support this idea about ownership, about responsibility, and Trudy?
Yeah. I was just going to for the Cycling World Championships, we, it's a one-off mega event. It had never been done before. So for us, it was about bringing the International Federation and the host together to be able to deliver this event, because we had to create something together. You know, I sort of explained that my role for 3 years was selling a vision, because we didn't know what this event would look like. We didn't know how people would behave with it. We didn't know. There were so many things we didn't know. So we had to work in partnership with the UCI, the International Cycling Federation, to make sure that we could tell everybody about this, what event was, so we could set it up for success with the future. Success for the future. And that's really important to Glasgow and Scotland as the host cities, because, you know, a fantastic reputation, Scotland, the perfect stage for major events. We needed to make sure that this event kept that reputation and enabled us to do that. But we did that in the backdrop of really challenging economic times, COVID. I don't even have to name them all. I'll just start with there. But, so we had to be agile. We had to change the way we did things. And, we delivered an incredibly successful event. But it wasn't without really strong partnerships that enabled us to do that. And they need to be maintained. The power of people. People deliver events. People have hosts, promote cities. It's all about people.
At the end, always. Yes, you want to extend on that?
I agree with Trudy again. I think just to make the point that I think the public sector is under more and more pressure, and the old models of funding major events are no longer there. You know, we were very lucky to make that case to create a major events fund, but remember, it came out of the back of an underspend. If it would have gone the other way and it would have been an overspend, then we could have seen a real problem in delivering on the legacy that has been promised for the next 10 years in Birmingham. So I think what we're seeing is much more reliance on commercial and partners, sponsors, no longer host cities writing big checks for mega events or really having to work hard to make the case in the face of cuts across social care, education, health, and, every other social pressure.
I think I'd like to add in there. I think there's something here around what where the responsibility sits for the organisation of the event, and I think that's sort of what the question is, but we can't see the result at the moment. But I am definitely the outlier here. I think the rights holders should be taking much more responsibility for the delivery of their events. They're their events. They're their product. They own it. They carry the reputational risk for it. So therefore, they should be doing more to support the staging of events the days of them bringing in sponsorship deals where they keep the money, they give very few rights to host cities, and then expect the host cities to pony up for all of the expenses involved in the event are disappearing very rapidly. And therefore, there needs to be a mind shift, particularly in that event owner environment, about what they're responsible for and what they can push off. I know now we still talk to IFs on an almost weekly basis, and the answer often is, well, we don't do very much. We give it to the LOC and they go off and do it. That's not going to keep going forever. And what that then does is it puts them at risk because they end up with lower quality events. It puts the city at risk because they're hosting an event that may reflect poorly on them. And as a result, everyone is the worse off around it.
Yeah, you're right. Let's maybe change a bit the subject, talking about knowledge transfer, culture issues, which are, you know, more and more important to consider. So maybe starting with Stuart, and the other may second on that. What about the transfer of knowledge and integration of these cultural aspects? What are your observation or lessons learned in this respect?
I'm actually going to look at my notes because I could talk about this forever and bore everyone to tears. I think it's really, to continue on from my previous point, it's much more a requirement now, in my view anyway, that the IFs take on more responsibility for the knowledge of transfer of knowledge. Simply saying we gave you a manual is not knowledge transfer. If there's a manual about how the event runs, it's not knowledge transfer. And I used this with someone earlier today, which is, you can give me a manual to fly a plane. I can read the manual. At the end of it, I still can't fly the plane. There needs to be more done to support providing the expertise on an ongoing basis to the LOCs, who rightly, in a lot of cases, don't have all that expertise in-house in their city or even in their region. And it can't be just a one-off of someone comes for a couple of days at the start of the process, then you don't see them again for another 12 or 18 months, and then they turn up and they go, why didn't you do all these sort of things? It has to be a collaborative process through the whole cycle of planning and delivering the event that allows them to do that. And I think the bit that was interesting for me then is we're starting to see a model emerge in some places where the IF is actually becoming or stating that they're going to become the LOC. So we're seeing it with UEFA, we're seeing it starting to appear in World Rugby, there's a couple of other sports as well. That in some ways is great because it means they're aiming for consistency of the quality of delivery of their event. What it doesn't allow for or may not allow for, and I think we need to see how it plays out, is what does that mean locally where the event is being delivered? Are they leaving any knowledge in the event in the host cities, or are they coming in with their LOC, doing a bunch of work and then leaving again without having a proper knowledge transfer process going on? The other bit then is their plans, have they been localised? So I know as an example that there are a lot of people who worked for FIFA on the World Cup in Qatar last year. When they got to Australia, when FIFA took them to Australia, it was a completely different operating environment. You couldn't operate in the same way, you couldn't plan in the same way, you couldn't deliver in the same way. And therefore, to just go, well, we're going to be the organising committee and we're going to move forward, that needs to be taken into account both, one, that they're transferring that knowledge, and then secondly, that in doing so, they do it in a way that's sensitive to how an event should operate in that environment, which is sort of cultural and social, economic, and therefore understanding what the expectation is within the local community of what that event looks like.
Thank you. Well, when we prepared the talk, Jeremiah, you mentioned the point about the cultural environment, and you're organizing, you know, events all over the globe almost, and how do you experience the importance of culture in that delivery?
Yeah, I think Stuart, well, first of all, don't let Stuart fly a plane. That's definitely the...
I
feel like Joel could fly a good plane based on his presentation before, but I'm not going to... So I think from our perspective, and we've really learned this as we continue to spread globally, in the States, for those that have worked in the States, you definitely have a regionalization of the country and you will have different experiences based on where you're hosting your events, which is true in every country. In the South is one place, North is very different. And you have to adapt to that to a certain degree, but culturally the United States is the United States and you can sort of get away with fudging it if you're in Florida versus you're up in the state of Washington, etc. But when you leave your sort of host country or the country that may know your sport the best, What I think you really have to do is adapt culturally to what will work and how best to communicate in those markets. And I'll just look at two sort of primary examples. When we bring our Mexico City series annually to Mexico City, where we host two major league games during the regular season in Mexico City, which is a very baseball-rich market, you can go down there and you can show up and you can pretty much put that game on in a much more turnkey way, similar to the way you may do in the States. They have the field ready. They generally know the principles of the game. You already have a very rich fan base that is familiar with your players. They know how nine innings of baseball go. They know everything that sort of happens. When you come to Europe and most recently in the UK, it's a much different environment, both in that you're building a field from scratch at London Stadium and literally bringing trays of turf to place onto the field and explaining to the host venue what it means to load in the venue for 30 to 45 days prior to the event and how to keep up that environment. But then you also are welcoming fans that may not be as familiar with your sport, and you have to make sure that you're thinking about how you're presenting it to them. Not only about the arrival procedures to come to a game and getting there earlier because gates open earlier than some other sports, but also within the game, how are you explaining to them what's happening on the field? And this is happening across the globe at different locations. So for us, we're constantly pivoting as we go globally. Asia would be an example of a little bit more baseball-rich market where they may have more familiarity. But we have to sort of look at each market and then adjust our planning and adjust our messaging, and that goes across the board, both for the delivery partner as well as for the fans experiencing it.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Truly, I mean, your event was very all-inclusive, you know, and the culture aspect was very important. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I can. So we certainly had equality, diversity, inclusion at the very heart of what we were doing. We sort of wanted to focus on three areas, which was EDI, sustainability, and participation, you know, more people riding bikes more often. We had this vision of our event being a catalyst for change, and that catalyst is we can't control the uncontrollables. We can give people the opportunity to think, to talk, and be a platform for those opportunities. But there are some tangible things that you can do within the delivery of your event. So we, from the very beginning, set out, we had, with our host partners and our funding partners, we had a pledge for our equality, diversity, and inclusion. But if we go right back to the beginning, two of the key things that we did was we fully integrated our para events with all of our events. So para, so track cycling, it was a fully integrated schedule. Phil, my director of sports up there, who worked on that schedule and will tell you that was probably one of the toughest things we had to do, was to pull together a track schedule to make sure that we could have a totally inclusive platform. And if you speak to the athletes that competed on the day, they and the fans in the stadium, they were just watching track cycling. And it was so wonderful to see and to have the road cycling in Dumfries and Galloway, and we just talked about it all just as cycling. There was no labels, there was nothing, and it was just lovely to see. So one thing that we're really proud of, and we hope that the UCI will take that into the future, because it would be a real shame that we did such a great job of it here. We've given the athletes a taste of what it's like, and to have that taken away from them in the future. So we will continue to talk to the UCI about making sure that that is something that lives long as a legacy of the event. The other thing that we did was we finished with the elite women's road race. And for us, that was really, really important. World championships have always finished with the elite men's race, and we said we wanted to finish with the elite women's, and the UCI agreed with that, and that was terrific. But then when you're in the moment, you know, you're in, you know, day nine and it's going really well and it's 11-day competition, the men's race was the opening weekend. How do you maintain that momentum to make sure that everybody does get behind it and we finish and bring the curtain down on what was an incredible 11 days? And really proud to say that, you know, the people of Scotland, again, just came out because we'd had a great sporting spectacle, civic pride, all of those traditional things actually that go with delivering mega events, came out and got this really, really great image that of the elite men's race on the first Sunday and then the elite women's race. And if you put the pictures side by side, you actually cannot tell. You cannot tell which race is which, except for the colour of the winner's jersey. And for me, anyone that was involved with the Cycling World Championship should be really proud that we did that together. And it won't always work to finish with the elite women's race. It won't always work. And that's the thing. You need to do what's right for your environment and what's culturally right and all of those things. It was right for us. but it may not always be right. And so again, we would still encourage organisers to think about that. It's not a risk, it's just good scheduling and, you know what, promoting everyone as being equal. And then we did lots of other wonderful things, you know, just across our event delivery, from just making sure we had accessible products for sensory needs to, you know, supporting Scottish Government's period poverty and all of those things that we did. And just really, really simple things, bike parking at events. We're a bike event. So, you know, just making sure we said what we were on the tin.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia. I'm pleased to learn that the women were fireworks at your event. Huh?
They were.
Do you have, Joël, any thoughts on the importance of cultural aspects and anything to add to that?
Yeah, thanks. I think I'd go back to the stat I held up. 1.5 million people bought tickets at the Commonwealth Games, but 5 million came to the city. What were they doing? So, you know, that cultural wraparound, you know, and how as a host city we can accommodate visitors to our city. So, you know, to those of you involved in the tourism industry will know sports tourism is the fastest growing sector within the tourism. And actually, if we can think about that 90-minute football match or whatever it is, baseball, or 18-hour baseball game, whatever your... joking, but you know that football match 90 minutes is part of a weekend visit that the family are paying a long time, you know, paying a lot of money to come and visit that city. So the events live in a kind of cultural tourism experience. And you know, I think we've talked about sportainment a couple of times, but there's a sports tourism equivalent as well, where you know, we make somebody's visit to Glasgow a much broader, richer experience by plugging into the cultural attractions and the visitor attractions that are here within the city and make it part of that city's life for a week or a day or a weekend. So it's really, I think it's critical to the experience of the fan.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you. Thank you for that. Trudy, to come back to your mega event. So if you think back, I mean, what did you need to do differently to make it really a success?
We had to do lots of things differently, mainly because it had never been done before. We had no rule book. We had no... So that transfer of knowledge piece. I would have just loved... We would have just loved to probably have a little bit more information. But at the same time, what was so exciting was we actually then got to create it. So we kind of got to control what we were able to control. But we learnt a lot from the model that we use. So we used a hub-and-spoke model, and you'll see, you know, Paris is using a similar concept on a much, much larger scale, but we tried to keep our hub small, so the Cycling World Championships Limited, we wanted to keep that as small as we could, and have the World Championships delivered by companies that do it day in and day out, and that would be retaining knowledge and expertise in Scotland and in the UK. And we did that, and we did that successfully, but not without its challenges and not without learning a lot along the way. You know, in a public entity, we're a subsidiary of Visit Scotland, so we're a public body, so dealing with all the great things of public financial and procurement guidelines. So, you know, there were some challenges along the way, and I would say that, you know, when you are hosting or delivering major events in those types of entities, you need to look at what are those constraints that may be around you, and then you need to think about very early on in the piece how would you manage those, because you can't remove them, but how do you best manage those? So for us, the hub was much bigger than we anticipated. We had Glasgow, tremendous city, delivering sort of half of our world championships, so it sort of skewed the spokes in the model, if you wanted to say that. So we kind of had to evolve along the way. We had this concept of hubbard smoke, lean, delivery outright, and we probably ended up somewhere in the middle, to be honest. So I definitely think the model has value, and I definitely think the model has benefits, because big organising committees, if we want to talk about sustainability, if we want to be really honest with ourselves, big organising committees cannot be sustainable into the future. They just can't be. So how do we evolve the delivery model? And we've tested it, didn't get it perfectly, but I think we've learnt some lessons, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about it because I've probably got lots to share. You can choose to listen or not. But But yeah, so the model, how would you do it differently? How would you learn from it? And that transfer of knowledge is just, you know, opportunities like this to chat. And I think, Jeremiah, you said it really well in the beginning. Just you sit in your bubble, you have your own way, you know what you're doing in your sport and in your activity. But there's so much else out there, and don't underestimate the value of listening. Listening, it's so important.
I think if I could just add in there, I think the hub and spoke thing is really interesting because as you look at events, if I think about always Euros have been like this, but what FIFA's doing with the World Cup and what's likely to happen with potentially future events, should it be Olympic Games or Commonwealth Games, you're going to end up with multiple organising committees, potentially across multiple countries. And therefore, how do you make sure that if I'm a spectator and I'm going from one event to another, how do I have the same experience at each of those things? Or like I go to Milano and it's great. I go to the Sliding Centre, which might be in Austria, and it's a completely different experience. So how do you make sure that from an event perspective that your experience for each of your major customer groups is the same across each of your different locations?
And that was one of our greatest challenges. We really had to make sure we sort of set the guidelines of what we would... How did people know that they were at the Cycling World Championships, not 13 different individual world championships? So, the key things like brand, last mile, all of those elements, the sport presentation, fan engagement, but it's certainly not easy, and that's where some of those things... That needs to evolve because it's not always efficient. People might think it's efficient, but it's not always efficient. So you do need to think about... You really do need to think about that. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I think Victoria's proved it's not efficient, the Commonwealth Games.
Yes.
But it's likely to be an ongoing thing, and either driven by environment, like particularly in winter sports, but also just an element of funding availability. A lot of cities won't have the funds available to host all the events relating to a mega event within their local domain, so things are likely to be more spread out.
Yeah, thank you for adding on that. Maybe before I ask the audience to come up with questions, maybe just to take this last point, Jeremiah, about the delivery model and how to make it different. What are your thoughts for your product in this respect?
Yeah, I think for us, and I think for all properties, you really have to figure out how you're going to differentiate yourself in a very busy landscape. There's so many other opportunities for fans and spectators to do things, whether that's staying at home or going to other sports properties, other entertainment properties. And as I mentioned before, I think some of it's the in-venue experience, but I also think it's being innovative with your game and the product that you're putting out there for the fans, so that they're not always getting the same thing when they go to one of the events that we all put on. You want to make it so that there's a little bit of unexpected, and you also want to make it so that you're thinking about what is their desire and what does that look like. What it may look like today may not be what it looks like in a couple of years. I don't think it's as changed as rapidly as we've been recently seeing, and so it's on us, as someone mentioned before related to the AI, to really adapt to that change and make our games and make our cities and our hosts able to look at things in a different way in a much more rapid pace, which is a challenge for sure, but I think if you take that approach, then you'll have much more success at trying to meet the needs of our fans and bringing them into your sport.
Thank you. So the floor is yours. I hope you come up with some questions. There is one up there. So I don't know how we throw this kind of box or... Yeah, just have a try. Works perfect.
Didn't get a game for Kilmarnock Volleyball Club for nothing, you know, for 20 years, actually. We've talked a lot over the day and in this session, a lot about innovative, transforming delivery. And you may say, well, I would say this as a supplier. I think we're missing a lot of ongoing transfer of knowledge and expertise in our suppliers. In my company alone, I've got former directors of Olympic Transportation, World Cup, etc., that are working in the company and going, and we're delivering in next event. And I know that's very difficult to deal with in procurement models as well, right? Because, you know, poacher turned gamekeeper, you know, all the expressions, etc. I can just say for sure there's a lot of expertise out there that's not getting utilised fully. And I think some of the, if we're really serious about transforming event delivery in different models, think of that too, because the expertise is in some of your suppliers. And I say it only for my company, but I know in many of my supply colleagues it's the same. And I've got to tell you, Jeremiah, I'm a regular at Camden Yards.
You sold me there with Camden Yards, yeah, which is our ballpark in Baltimore.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say that I think that it is on the IF, the leagues, et cetera, to really sit down at the table when they bring those delivery partners in, the suppliers, to offer them a real seat at the table. And not just, I need this from you, but instead really having the dialogue to understand, right, will this work or not? Listen, we're a big idea place, and actually there's some of you in the room that have worked with us before, and oftentimes we'll come to the table and we'll bring up an idea or something that's being driven from a conference room or a boardroom or a genius marketing idea or sponsorship idea that may be there, but it's often the supplier, the delivery partner that will say to us, lovely idea, not practical, but here is how we can pivot to do somewhat of what you said and still achieve the same goal, but ultimately have pure success. And so I do think it is on the IF and the league to have those conversations, and I think it's a totally fair point, something that I sort of drill down as I talk to all the folks in my group to make sure that they're listening, because listening is half the game in all these businesses.
I'd like just adding quickly there, I think there's an interesting thing here, particularly if you're going to be a host city and you're going to have an LOC, there's an element of pride of it's our event and we want to have our people working on and things like that. And I think what was being referred to there is a really interesting challenge, which is how, just because they're a supplier, doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to bring incredible value to the table. They're not just providing a bus service, in this case, or a technology service, or whatever it may be. I think LOCs need to start thinking about, when I'm dealing with my suppliers, what is the scope that I'm giving them to? And the scope may not just be a workforce system. It should be actually, how do we set workforce up in a different way that provides the best possible output for our business or for our event? And I think there's something there that sometimes, it's our proud local event, we know the people, we've done it all before. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Maybe you've only done it at a national level, and this international event requires a level of expertise and knowledge and experience that you don't necessarily have in-house. And there is, I think, really strongly, as a supplier, I also say this, but culturally, there needs to be a view of suppliers as partners rather than just a supplier. Because that mind shift makes a big difference in how you work together.
Thank you. Yeah. Well,
and Ed truly knows this far better than I, but I think that's what that hub and spoke model aimed to do, take existing organisers and expertise and utilise them as part of the ecosystem. But I'd also say I agree with your point about the circus, you know, arriving and leaving town in Birmingham and West Midlands. We've lost all of that event expertise. What we have retained in the city, though, is some of the great people who are part of that city and region who've thought about a new way of doing things, a new way of operating, new relationships that have been formed. And I look around the room and I can see some familiar faces. There's an incredible amount of experience and knowledge within host cities as well that actually are getting better and better at fine-tuning the delivery and the impact of these events in the UK. And I think we're pretty good at it in the cities, and we don't always bring that to the fore either. So I think the point is well made. It's both sides of the equation, and as all recognising, we bring expertise to the table that can be utilised to improve events.
And sorry, if I quickly add in, sorry to keep talking, but it should be part of the procurement process as well, which is, okay, if you're going to come and do this with us, what are you leaving behind that is a benefit to our community, our workforce, our labour force, all that sort of stuff? It should be a key component of your deliverable in your RFP procurement process, however you work.
So 60% in the Com Games was the threshold. So 60% of your employed workforce and supply chains was from the region. So only not all of it went. Yeah.
Thank you. Thankful for your question, and even more thankful for your answers, because me, as chairing an association of global event suppliers, realized that at the end, the suppliers are also part of the game and get the credits also, because usually it's at the end the suppliers who make the stage for the show. Do we have a question for another one? Time for another one? Yeah, a last question.
Throw it. I had a question for Trudy. Tricky one. Did you do a transfer of knowledge with Paris 2024, who are going to do some of the same model? Or did they came to ask for a transfer of knowledge?
No.
So then we go for all for a drink now.
Certainly, certainly on a not on a specific level, but certainly with suppliers that are working on with Paris 2024, we are absolutely have had some of those conversations and shared some of the similar challenges that we've been facing. And obviously with the UCI also as part of the Paris 2024, certainly we have had a long and an extensive debrief with the UCI and actually have another one coming up in December. And part of that is about making sure the International Federation can take that. We delivered 13 World Championships, and they shouldn't just be looking at World Champs. They should be looking at their Olympic disciplines, their World Cups and other things, because there were things that we did that they would not otherwise do. And if they're getting into delivery, they need to understand some of that. So really, really good question. And it doesn't have to be linear. And maybe we think too linear. And you know, again, so good question. I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer.
Thank you. We have a very last one.
Yes. This is actually to Joel. Last year's Commonwealth Games. It's two questions. I'm sorry. So thinking about the Commonwealth Games, we've been discussing. So we're from the Northeast, and what we're thinking about next year and the future, because we're going from three local authorities, it's a combined authority, to seven, is actually looking at hosting major events and how important sporting events are to include cultural wraparound events, because obviously then you're obviously covering everything, and also the participatory side and engagement side and capturing those young people. So that's the first one. How important was that for the last year's events? The other question is, when you mentioned that there was an underspend, did you still reach your outputs and outcomes of last year's Commonwealth Games? And the final, actually it's three, isn't it? Sorry. It's like an interview.
If the answers are short, it's okay.
So my last question is, if you didn't meet those outputs outcomes, are you using those outputs and outcomes for your underspend on those 10 events? And I promise that's the last one.
Tough question, this. I think we... Sport and culture for me is they're two sides of the same coin. You know, it's actually one strengthens the other. The big case I'm trying to make is actually across the West Midlands. If we're going to compete globally, we shouldn't be competing against each other. We should be competing against cities around the world. And the best cities around the world work together, and it's the sum of the parts. And actually, once you add the sum of the parts up, your culture, guess what, becomes much richer, much more diverse, much of more of a rich story, a narrative that you can use. The second part, the Commonwealth Games broke even in terms of economic impact, so it delivered what was spent. And I think the reports are due out now as to what you would call lagging indicators. Some experts in the room, you know, we'll be able to talk about the social impact and the multipliers and all of the rest, but it washed its face in terms of an event. And as I mentioned before, the underspend, the 70 million underspend, we've used a framework that talks about all of the things that you would expect in a, delivering economic, social and environmental impact to actually drive our investment decisions. So we're only investing in the things that will deliver the return on investment that we've said is really important to us. If young people are really important to us, we're going to invest in events that attract young people. If diversity is really important to us, we're going to invest in those events. And so, I think we're, you know, almost like trying to stick to the plan from like last couple of years around being driven by purpose and impact. And it's now just starting to kind of deliver the results. I've not mentioned in 26, we're hosting the IWG Global Women in Sport Conference. So again, building on Sport Accord, where we'll have global sporting leaders in, we'll then be kind of championing the growth of women's sport and women and girls sport in 2026. So it's a bit of a game plan, if you like, that we're trying to kind of see through on the back of the Commonwealth Games. So does that answer the questions?
There's loads more. Yes, perfect. Thank you.
He's buying the drinks later, Ben.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. So please join in for a warm round of applause for the panelists. Stuart, Jeremiah, Trudy, and Joel.